Good afternoon, everybody. We're going to open the House Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness. The date, of course, is Valentine's Day, so happy Valentine's Day to everybody, and appreciate you being here today. We have a few bills to get through and a HCR to do. We've got a couple members that are conducting business in the House. They'll be here shortly, but we can still take the testimony for the purpose of hearing the bills. So with that being said, if you would, Ms. Edwards, if you'll start us off with HCR 4, I'll open a public hearing on HCR 4.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Concurrent Resolution 4 honors Lieutenant Commander Neil Swarthout for heroic acts as a United States Navy pilot during World War II and the Korean War.
That's what we're doing.
Lieutenant Commander moved to St. Helens, Oregon in 1928 at the age of 6 and later attended Oregon State College. He enlisted in the United States Navy in March of 1942. During his service, he flew various aircraft in World War II and the Korean War. For his heroic acts, he was awarded 5 Air Medals and the Navy Cross. Upon returning from the Korean War, the Lieutenant Commander continued his service in the United States Navy Reserve until 1962 and officially retired from the United States Navy on March 14, 1982. House Concurrent Resolution 4 acknowledges his long and distinguished service.
Thank you, Ms. Edwards. And, you know, for the audience and for members of the committee, today's a real special day for me. This individual, Mr. Swarthout, is a constituent of Gresham's and a very dear friend to a very dear friend of mine. And so I would like at this point to call up my good friend, Ms. Ann Endicott, if she'll please join us at the dais. And Ann, if you will, please come forward. And you'll state your name for the record, but I'll give you a little background committee as she's taking her seat. I met Annie years ago. She is a reporter for the Gresham Outlook. She does a phenomenal job. She captures things that happened years ago in the community and reminds us all about what Gresham is such a special place to live. So to me, you've just continued to do a phenomenal job. Proud to call you a friend. I'm really proud to have you here to talk about our good friend, Mr. Neil Swarthout. And it means the world that you came from Gresham to testify on his behalf. So please, if you would, state your name for the record and tell us what you know about Mr. Swarthout.
Ann Endicott, I'm from Gresham. And thank you, Greg, for those wonderful words.
It's Chair Matthews.
Chair Matthews, I apologize. I don't get out much.
I'm kidding.
Woo!
It'll always be Greg to you, Ann.
Oh, we. I remember that one.
Neil is a magnificent man, and I in some respects I feel sort of bad. I don't want to slight the other veterans from World War II in singling out Neil. However, what I found to be most impressive about him was you don't stumble across a Navy Cross winner very often, and he's got a great sense of humor. He was very laid back about all of it. And certainly never expecting any kind of notoriety. I know that. He's in Palm Springs, has no clue we're talking about him today. And I think that due to his age, he's 91, I think that a lot of, we do a good job acknowledging our veterans, sort of, but their numbers are dwindling, and the stories that they have to tell and the reasons that they did what they did have allowed us to all sit here today. And I think that in its own right really has a lot to say for what his service was, the contributions that he made, and what he had, you know, the reason that this has been proposed. And I applaud Chairman Matthews for bringing this to your attention and to everyone else's attention. And I am very grateful for the opportunity to be here to speak on his behalf.
That's great. It's really, if anybody were to read, without taking into account it's Mr. Swarthout, and just without the names, and read what he's accomplished on behalf of this great country, he's very deserving of the recognition. As you say, the numbers are dwindling, and we have that conversation in this committee a lot about how do we recognize these folks properly while we can, rather than in memorial. And this is one small way of doing that as a state. And I'm really excited you're here today. And I'll find out, committee members, do you have any questions of Ms. Endicott? So for me, I guess, how long have you known Neil?
Well, actually, how I found out about Neil was through John, my husband. He played golf with him, and John came home one day last spring, and he says, you know, I met this guy today out on the golf course. He's 90 years old. He's a World War II veteran. And of course, the reporter in me goes, do you carry my business cards with you? And so that's how I kind of got connected with Neil, and I had the pleasure of spending an afternoon with him. We looked over his medals and the whole wall in his family room is covered in World War II vintage aircraft photos. I mean, it's phenomenal. he really kind of downplayed it, but you could see in his own little way he was kind of excited to finally have a, you know, new blood to tell the stories to. And so I did the story, I think, in July. And so I've kept in touch with him through John and that circuit over the last few months. But he's a delightful man.
And we're excited to have before us the resolution. And I'm just so thankful that you covered that story. You know, in today's world, media sometimes latches onto stories that aren't so popular and aren't so intriguing and don't necessarily, you know, communicate the positive. And it's not your fault. It's what drives people. But you always find a way to take the special stories in the city. And I really appreciate what you do, you know, as a friend and as a member of the community. Thanks for the work you do at the Outlook. And thanks for what you continue to communicate. And all your work with Camp Rosamond, too. So we are talking about HCR 4. And are there any questions of this fine representative from Gresham? I just promoted you. Well, I elected you, really. Nothing. Okay, and as you can see too, when you read the resolution, you know Mr. Swartout he's one of those pilots of the dive bombers. Not exactly probably the best position for folks to have, but he was he tremendously served our country. So proud to have him as an Oregon resident. I know he's found sunshine during the winter time. The goal for the committee and for folks in the audience is to do this in a way that when we do finally, assuming we pass, that we can recognize him with him in the building. But for right now, he's not aware that this is even continuing today. So appreciate you making the drive from Gresham, and I really appreciate all the work you do, and thanks to John for his work as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman and Committee.
Is there anybody else who would testify? I know that John Molis had brought this to the attention on behalf of some of the building trades folks, too. He had heard about this great story through John and said, we need to recognize this man. Is there anybody out in the audience who would like to testify on HCR 4? Seeing none, I will close the public hearing on HCR 4. And committee, if there's no objections, I'd like to open a work session on HCR 4.
Okay.
I will now open a work session on HCR 4.
Chair Matthews, I move HCR 4 to the floor to be adopted recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Parrish moves HCR 4 to the floor with the adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Yes, Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Chair Matthews. this is just one of many, many stories that these people lived in history. There's so many of them out there, and I would hope that we'd have an opportunity. It's like my father-in-law. He was a personal pilot for Jimmy Doolittle back in the European theater, and you need to get with these people. You need to videotape their stories, because you wouldn't believe some of the stories these people have. And they not only witnessed history, they lived history.
Absolutely, and thanks for that comment. And as you know, we have a hard time getting veterans to come forward a lot in this committee, and yet when you can get them to start talking and sharing their stories, it's amazing what the greatest generation has done for this great nation. So with that, are there any further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Hoffman?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fagan?
Aye.
Vice Chair Parrish?
Aye.
Chair Matthews?
Aye. And the motion passes. HCR 4 is adopted. We'll need to assign a carry for the measure. And if committee, if you don't object, it'd be my honor to carry this bill. And I'm not normally one to assign it to me, and you're happy to co-carry with me.
I'll assign it to you.
But if you don't object, I'd like to do that, please. Thank you. And we'll assign
that. Can we take
a
vote on that
chair.
One, too, Mr. Chair?
With your seniority, Representative, you get to do about anything you want in this building.
Thank you.
With yours, no. Thank you very much. And again, thank you to the Endicotts for making the trip from Gresham and helping us with the HCR-4 today. And with that, we will now, I see Representative Barnhart's in the audience, so we're going to open a public hearing on HB 2680.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2680 establishes an Oregon Veterans Home to be located in Lebanon. It creates a separate Lebanon Veterans Home Construction Fund in the state treasury, and it designates $10.5 million in net proceeds and interest earnings from lottery bonds for the biennium beginning July 1st, 2011, and deposited in Roseburg Veterans Home Construction Fund to acquire, develop, construct, and equip the Lebanon Veterans Home. declares an emergency and is effective on passage. We also have two amendments. The Dash 1 amendment would eliminate Section 1 of the bill, correcting a description of the Oregon Veterans Home in Lebanon as the fourth veterans home. And the Dash 2 amendment incorporates the Dash 1 amendment, as well as separating the $10.5 million in net proceeds and interest earnings from the lottery bonds into $6.5 million for Roseburg Veterans Home Construction Fund and $4 million for Lebanon Veterans Home Construction Fund. There is a revenue statement issued on the Dash 2 and a fiscal statement issued on the Dash 2.
Thank you, Ms. Edwards. And joining us, Representative and Senator, thanks for coming over. And if you would, state for the record your names and give us your testimony. If you don't mind and object, I'm going to step outside really quick, say goodbye to constituents, pass the gavel. I'll be listening for noise. Thanks for coming to the committee.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Chair, my name is Phil Barnhart. I'm the state representative from House District 11, which includes a portion of Linn County that runs up to the edge of the city limits of Lebanon, which is a part of what got me involved in this issue. I will tell you, more than a year ago, I met with Commissioner Nyquist, a Linn County commissioner, to talk about the proposal to establish the Veterans Home in Lebanon. And at that time, we were talking about a slightly different revenue issue, or issue involving the cost of the facility than we are today. I'm going to skip to the chase and get to the one that that is involved today. During the time that this Veterans Home has been under issue, the people of Linn County adopted a bond levy to allow them to pay the local match for the construction of this facility, which I think is in the neighborhood of $10 million.
Mm-hmm.
Since the time that that was done, the federal government has completed some studies on the nature of the facilities and what facilities work best for managing the situation that comes up for veterans who are likely to find themselves in this kind of facility. The result of that study was a revamp of the facility plan and an increase in the facility cost. But little I know about that, and I don't know very much about it, it does seem to me that the new plan is significantly better in terms of the livability of the facility for people who are living there than the old-fashioned kind of long hallway hospital-type facility that they had originally planned. But it does cost more money per bed to do. So that's why we're here, is to ask the legislature to appropriate through a bond process the additional match money necessary to meet the new cost of the of this facility. Now, I will tell you that in the nature of things, and this is much of what I'm telling you now comes from my discussion with the people at the State Veterans Affairs Department. The Federal Veterans Affairs Department is ready to go ahead, we think, with the construction in Lebanon. After that is completed and after they've determined what the facility's needs in Oregon are, they will then determine whether or not to go ahead with an additional project in Roseburg. It appears that the legislature in its bill last time actually got these things out of order compared to what the United States Veterans Affairs Department wanted to do. And that's not surprising. I remember what happened. I'm sure some of you do as well. But now we have an opportunity to actually complete the Veterans Home in Lebanon, which gets us closer to what the legislature intended in 11 when it passed the bill to fund the Veterans Home in Roseburg. The reason for the removal of Section 1 in the bill in the amendment in Dash 2 amendments is that we discovered that it, actually the Lebanon home is considered to be or is designated as the second Oregon Veterans Home already. So adding it as the fourth one would be superfluous and utterly unnecessary. So we take that clause out. We also, in looking at the bill, inserting the language on lines 6 through 16 of the amendment, of the Dash 2 amendments, better describes what we're trying to do instead of the language on line 2, or page 2, lines 3 through 9, because only a portion of the available $10 million needs to be available for the Lebanon Veterans Home. Now, I'm not going to vouch for the specific language on lines 6 through 16 of the Dash 2 amendments. I think it's right, but this bill does have a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee, and you can be sure that LFO will make certain that the language that authorizes the Treasurer to issue the bonds will be accurate and correct. But I think this does express the interest and the intent of the people who brought the bill. I will simply note then that most of the members of the House and Senator Close are on this, who represent the area, that is Linn County, are on this bill. We have general support for it. Commissioner Nyquist is here, who probably can give you some more details about this proposal. One final thing that I'd like to say is that we have a waiting list at the existing Veterans Home. We think it's clear that that this will fill up fairly quickly. The ongoing operating expenses are paid by the federal government as a part of their ongoing treatment for veterans.
Thank you, Representative. Senator, did you have something to add?
Thank you, Chair Matthews. Just a couple words. I'm Senator Betsy Close, and I represent Linn and Benton Counties. We're very excited at the prospect of having the Lebanon Veterans Home in the district. We have many veterans that have settled in our area due to the location of Camp Adair, which is north of Corvallis during World War II, and our large Veterans Day parade that we have every year. So I hope that you will be able to cast your I vote for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you both very much. Are there any questions for the panel? Yes, Representative Huffman.
Mr. Chair, would it be appropriate for me to just dialogue a little bit rather than asking a question to
absolutely appropriate, yes.
Thank you. First of all, you know, there's been extensive support for the Lebanon Home, and there's no doubt or question about that. The Roseburg Home came about, and you know, in hindsight, I think it's fortunate that we've got the vehicle there and that $10 million that had been appropriated or set aside with a sunset that we can use it for this purpose. The amount that's needed is just shy of $4 million. And what that is, and as Representative Barnhart was talking, I was visualizing, as the feds made the design changes, the feds appropriate 65% of the cost of the design and construction of the home. So the difference between the old 65% and the new design 65%, the feds are taking care of that. However, it's against federal statute for them to pay any portion of the local match. So the increase in the local match comes back to the community. So the difference of the nearly 4 million is 3.7 roughly, is the difference in the old 35% and the new 35%, if you follow that. Normally, I would be extremely opposed to this because a local match is a local match. And having been extremely involved in the first Veterans Home in the Dalles, bringing it to the community, presenting it, getting the support for the bond, as a taxpayer, every year I pay my portion of that local match. And so from a local community support, it's really critical that we don't change any aspect. Thus my frustration in 2011, where $10 million was appropriated from the state for Roseburg. I'll just come right out and say it. I was adamantly opposed to that. But in retrospect, like I said, I'm glad it's now there that we can use it for this purpose. If I thought that there was any reason that this appropriation would offset that local intent and the local buy-in, I would oppose it. But I do not. That's why I'm being so lengthy on the record. I want to explain what the intent of that local match is and say that I do not feel that this in any way circumvents that local match. I would like to say, though, on the record, that for my part, and I can only speak for myself, I would not want anybody in the future listening back to this hearing to think that I was approving for the legislature to pay any part of a local match. I think it's inappropriate. It doesn't follow the rules and guidelines for veterans' homes, and I just wanted to make that very clear that I do not, in general, approve of the legislature appropriating that local match. And you know, I've been involved with dialogues with Linn County Commissioners and Wasco County Commissioners that after the appropriation to Roseburg said, well, wait a minute. I think those conversations hopefully are behind us because Lebanon is well on its way to being fulfilled. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for indulging me.
And thanks for sharing the dialogue. And we've had much discussion because, you know, I mean, let's face it, we all support what we're trying to do here. And out of this committee, you know, we'd like to make sure that we understand it's a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and this will get vetted even further. But for now, you know, your comments being on the record are helpful for all of us, and I appreciate you sharing. Any other questions from the committee? Representative Barnhart?
Just a real quick comment. I don't care how we fund these things, truthfully. I just think we need to fund them, so I'm going to disagree with my good friend sitting over there. Well, I'm sure there's some money left over in the CRC budget. We could pull it from there. But I just want to thank you both for bringing this and having a heart for it and caring about it for your community because it is necessary. We have 375,000 veterans in Oregon and not enough dollars to help them out. And so the fact that you're here and making an ask when we know the budgets are tight is courageous, and I appreciate you coming and doing that. So that was my...
Thank you. And we've had that discussion. It's important that we have advocates for our veterans in all our committees and in both chambers. And so thank you both for sharing your time today and appreciate your work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great day. And with that, I'll bring up from Linn County, Commissioner Roger Nyquist.
Chairman Matthews, committee members, for the record, Roger Nyquist. I'm the chair of the Linn County Board of Commissioners. And I would just like to follow up on the conversation you've been having. The process was we were awarded the home in 2010, and part of our proposal was to go out to the voters for $12 million in funding. And we did that. I personally asked at the time, one of my fears was the situation we have right here. Projects always go up in price, they never go down. But we ask, and we all reasonably concluded that $30 million was the budget for the project. We ask for $12 million. About $1.5 million was to pay for the property, and the other $10 million we gave to the agency, to the Department of Veterans Affairs. And so voters in Linn County have been paying for 2 years now property taxes on that $10 million. And we did it with a levy instead of a bond. And not to get too complicated about this, one of the impacts has been is that we've impacted other districts, sheriff's office, public safety, and other things just with that amount. We don't have the money at the local level for the additional match. It's unlikely that the voters in this environment would approve it. The fact of the matter is we've already broken ground. We had a groundbreaking ceremony last September, and we just need to see this project through to completion, and this seems like a reasonable way to do that. Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely, and thank you for your testimony. Members, any questions of the commissioner?
Thank you.
Thank you. And did the Department of Veterans Affairs want to come forward? Did you have anything to add to this conversation? I thought maybe by chance we would have Mr. Van Dyke or Mr. Mann, either or both. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming today. And if you'll state your name for the record, and you've done this plenty of times before.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Tom Mann with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. With me is our Deputy Director, Ed Van Dyke. The problem of this even having to be before you is when the federal VA decided to change the construction model. In 2008, I was the guy that wrote the grant for the second veterans home. And it was based on a facility model, kind of like, have you been to the veterans home? It's wings, it's fantastic, but it's an old style nursing home. So they came out and said, we want to do a more of a home style. So it's pods where people would feel like they're in a more home-like environment, and it's fantastic. But it costs more. So one of the consequences was VA said, no problem. We'll just raise your grant proposal. Well, that's great from the federal level, but it doesn't take into account what happened at the local level. And so we were excited at first and said, that's great. This thing gets paid for the 65%. And then we went, whoa, wait a minute. Portland County has already gone to its voters and done their match in good faith and did everything that they were supposed to do. And we all thought we were going forward, hand in glove. And now they needed more money. And so, like Representative Huffman said, it was fortuitous that the Roseburg bill passed last session and this bonding authority was authorized by the legislature. So now Linn County, which really is the second veterans home, can take advantage of that piece of legislation. Honestly, this was the last thing that any of us that are involved in this process wanted to do was come before the legislature and talk about veterans homes. This has always been a process that's been outside the legislative process. The director determines through a process the location of the veterans home. There's a 65% from the federal government, 35% from the local match. Happy. The state doesn't have to be involved in that kind of stuff. Unfortunately, this just worked out this way, and I think everybody has worked in good faith, including legislators. But I want to make sure that you as members have a really good sense of why this happened. It is unusual. It is not the usual way things go, and it was completely due to the federal government deciding that they wanted to use a different model, more of a community-based home care instead of the old facility-based nursing home care model, and that it just increased those costs.
Great, thank you.
Do you want to add anything?
Mr. Van Dyke, would you care to say anything for the record? It's great to have you before the committee. I understand we'll be seeing more of you as the session goes on.
Well, this is my first time in front of the committee.
Well, we'll make it super simple. Okay. Just state the name for the record, and we'll just go right into it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Edward Van Dyke, and I'm the Acting Deputy Director of the Oregon Department of Veteran Affairs. I really can't add much to what Tom Mann has said. The Veterans Home in Lebanon is a very important thing for all of Oregon, for all of Oregon's veterans. I do understand that we have received word today that we did receive matching fund from the federal government. So that's very good news.
Great.
So it's very paramount that the House Bill 2680, I think, is given a very good representation. Hopefully it will get passed, because it's definitely a good thing to have for us.
Wonderful. And I'm assuming you're a veteran as well. I see you're wearing an Army pin. So
I'm a 22-year veteran of the U.S. Army.
Thank you for your service. And joining you on the panel
is Bruce Shriver.
Morning, Chair Matthews. I guess I should say good afternoon, Chair Matthews, members of the committee. Just one little bit of clarification there. As Deputy Director Mr. Van Dyke said, we did receive a priority list from the VA today. It stated their intention to fund 70 projects in I think it was 24 or 25 states. That's their intention. Because of the continuing resolution and the budget issues going on at the federal level, they have not issued a formal funding letter for the Lebanon home yet. We did receive some good news in relating to Representative Huffman's district. There was another grant request that we had in for some facility improvements up in the Dalles Veterans Home. That one has received the formal funding letter. But just to be clear for the committee, at this time, we have not received the formal funding letter for Lebanon, just their statement of intent.
I appreciate that clarification. And so everybody understands, too, in the audience, that this issue and many others get vetted through the process of interim committee times. And within this committee, we have our two former chairs, former Chair Witt and former Chair Esquivel. And so we're very comfortable on this bill, and the committee feels kind of the need to act fairly swiftly, because this won't be the only stop for this bill. And it will be seeing some other folks that will have eyes on it as well. And we'll keep an eye for that letter as well. So thank you all for that. And are there any questions,
Mr.
for the
Chair,
committee?
I did.
Yes, sir. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, or Chair Matthews. What happens, let's play devil's advocate, what happens if the feds decide they aren't going to do this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Baskerville, we have been wargaming that for several days. With sequestration and possible budget reductions and those type of things, we asked ourselves that question. What happens if that money for the construction budget in the VA goes away? It's about $85 million. We have been very judicious about spending the money that we have in hand. There are certain gates you have to hit in order for VA to do their next part of their process. They make you spend a little money up front to show that you are committed. We have spent, I think, a little under $2 million thus far in architectures, in land, in getting the land prepped and all those type of things. We've talked among ourselves saying we want that funding letter from VA to absolutely guarantee that we're going to go forward, because the last thing we want to do is start building some shells or some footprints and then say, oh, just kidding, we're taking the money back. I was on the phone today with Senator Wydenstaff on this very issue, and I asked him to push up the line these questions. What happens under sequestration to the $3 billion of administrative costs that come out of VA? Is the construction budget in that? Two, when we say we're number 70 on their list and their intent is to fund that, what exactly does that mean in terms of that funding letter being signed by the secretary? Three, how do we go about with the money that they are talking about there, making sure that the bills we've already incurred get reimbursed? And what is that process? Because what I want to do is make sure that we are solvent as we move forward, and we are definitely having those exact same conversations. Worst case scenario, we would all have to put our heads together in a meeting and say, if VA says, we're no longer doing construction, we're no longer doing veterans homes, which would be a disaster, not just for our state, for 25 other states. We would all have to get together and kind of figure out where we go from there. But at this point, from my conversations with federal VA, I know that our construction manager, John Osborne, has been on the phone with them every day, and my conversation with Senator Wydenstaff, who's been very engaged with us, we feel very good about this, but we are not... as joyous as we are, we're on the list and there's intent and all that great stuff. We're like you. We're cautiously optimistic given the budget considerations. We understand that there's a six-month continuing resolution that Congress is looking at right now. We also understand 2 weeks from now, sequestration happens. And so we have a lot of questions like you do.
Well,
absolutely.
So if we get into that position, how do you put the stops to this and how do you undo what we've done?
Mr. Chair, Representative Baskerville, that is a tricky question. I would tell you that just thinking off the top of my head, and we just hope that would never happen, we would have to make Linn County whole, obviously. We would have to talk about what you do with that land, because there's a piece of land out there that something needs to be built on. And there are other partners in here. Samaritan, the hospital folks are involved in this with us. There's a lot of partners. So what I can tell you is we're going forward as if this thing's going to be built. We have every intention from VA. We asked VA 2 days ago, what happens to construction budget under sequestration? They said, don't worry, it's fine. They continue to encourage us and tell us we're going to be okay. You and I have been around a long time, so we know what that means.
That's why I'm nervous.
When the money's in hand, we'll feel better about this. That all said, I know that our congressional delegation back there is on top of this and working very hard to make sure that there is no process where we have to go backwards. And I would tell you this, there's a whole bunch of congressmen and senators back in Washington that have a stake in this. Because, like I said, there's 25 other states that are on that list that want to get funded as well. So it's not just Oregon that's at stake. My experience in Washington, my experience here is there will be a last-minute budget deal. There's always a last-minute budget deal. The government got shut down once, I think, for a week, and nobody missed a beat. Something will happen, and the money will come through. The question for me is timing. When does the money come through? When can we start billing? When can we move forward on these type of things?
Thanks, Representative Baskerville. And I couldn't help but notice Representative Barnhart wave his hand. Did you want to address that as well, or do you feel comfortable with what? Okay, great.
Tom.
Thank you. It's a great question, and certainly one to ask. And so, Representative
Thank Barnhart. Thank you. For the record, Representative Phil Barnhart, again. The answer is there's several different pieces to the question, I think. From the standpoint of the state and our obligation under this bill, the treasurer routinely handles decisions about go, no go in terms of the sale of bonds around whether things are ready. And he has the capacity and the legal obligation not to issue a bond that for which the underlying requirements aren't met. If the federal government doesn't meet its obligation to fund their 65%, then I'm quite confident that the Treasurer will not issue this bond, even if the legislature authorizes it. One other comment, if I could. I think that we increase the odds of getting that funding letter if we get more support, and the support of the House and the Senate and the governor in this matter. I think the evidence is that the state of Oregon is very interested in this, and it probably in a very marginal way increases the likelihood that we'll get that letter.
Thank you very much for your explanation. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tom, would you mind coming back?
We could play music if it made it easier for the chairs to rotate.
I just wanted to see if you could. Would you mind explaining, doing a better job of what we've experienced over the years, and why the model of funding is set up the way it is, and part of the reason for the 35% local match and the community buy-in that I was trying to explain, you know, what have your experiences been and why do you see that vital and important that it doesn't come from the state, but it does come from the locals?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Huffman, I almost hate to admit this, but I was here in 1993 as a staffer when the first Veterans Home was going through its process, and we had three jurisdictions that were interested in a Veterans Home because no one really knew what it was and how it would impact a local community. The local match was important, though, because other states have done this. There's 151, I think, veterans homes or something like this around the country. The local match is important because you need to do several pieces that come from the local community. You need to find the employees that actually staff the home. You have to have the vendors locally that can provide the service that happened. And this is a full-service nursing home for people that have care needs that are fairly extreme and rehabilitation needs. You need to have the support services of a local hospital because of what they can do. You need to have the ability to get the residents because in order to break even on these things, you need people in the beds. And so if a local jurisdiction doesn't have the components, whether it's travel, the support systems around it within the community, those things don't exist and the people don't support it in the local community, veterans homes fail. And if you follow veterans news at all, you've probably seen around the country there have been two or three veterans homes in the past 6 months that have failed. And it's sad to see because it's such a great resource when they're done correctly. Our veterans home, and I think that you'll smile at this, has won several awards as being one of the best in the nation. But it's because the department and our partners in the community and our partners in the legislature, we are very, very mindful of making sure that it is a partnership and that we're getting CNAs from the local community college to come in and train. And we're doing all the things you do to do this right. But again, if you don't have that local piece and your people aren't supporting this and you go to a community where there's not that groundswell of that grassroots support, veterans homes fail. And it's a very expensive lesson to learn. And so when we did this in 93, you may recall, there was a huge amount of work done on that bill. And conversations and conversations and conversations about can you make this viable? And the veterans that were in the legislature were gung-ho, let's do this, it's great for veterans. But a lot of folks were putting the brakes on saying, do we really want to get into this idea of nursing homes for veterans? And I am glad we did, because if you've not been to the veterans home, you have to go and see the dynamic and the culture and just how well those people are taken care of up there. It is amazing what we do. I can't even express how different it is than the nursing home my mother was in with multiple sclerosis that I was growing up. Yeah. And so I'm a big proponent, but like Representative Escobar, we're also smart about this. And that's why the local match and the local community support is so vital.
I guess your heart is where your wallet is. So when you write the check every year, you know, you have a vested interest. And so it's more of a sense of the Dallas community embracing the home rather than, oh, yeah, it's this nice place for veterans up on the hill. And that's why it scares me for that model to ever change and the state to start appropriating the money, because then it becomes a home on the hill rather than the community going, it's our home on the hill for our veterans.
Right.
Point well taken. Any other questions? Yes, Representative Esquivel.
But the good thing about this, Representative, is that they already have skin in the game.
Absolutely.
You know, that's good.
And the point I was making was into the future,
mm-hmm.
that we don't do another
Roseburg
appropriation.
Yeah, I'm taboo, actually, on this, of the state getting into local matches.
Great. And it's great to hear from the community. It's great to hear, you know, our commissioner came down, and, of course, the legislators from the area. You know, everybody's got, like you said, skin in the game, vested interest, and we have a big heart on Valentine's Day for folks. So, so with that, is there anybody else? Great. Cameron Smith would like to join us, if he could. Thank you very much for coming, and well done, Mr. Van Dyke. We'll see more of you.
Good afternoon, Chair Matthews, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Cameron Smith, the Senior Policy Advisor for Governor Kitzhaber on Military Veterans and Emergency Management. I do want to second that importance of that local match and acknowledging that the local community down in Lebanon did step up in the surrounding area. What I want to highlight, though, in all of our personal family budgets, if the design changes change on us, whether your spouse wants better tile or someone wants a good garage on their new house, you can build smaller. That's one option. But I do want to highlight, it takes a certain population, you know, we could chop townhouses off of this smaller home model and have much fewer veterans served, but the financial sustainability long term would be impacted. You need a certain center of gravity population-wise. It, you know, in the Dalles, it's, I think, 152 beds, and there's, when we get low on the census, you get nervous because the ongoing, you know, there's the build-out cost with the local match and the federal VA portion, and then you also have the ongoing sustainability of the financial operation. And it's not all just blank check from the feds. There are state dollars in terms of the Medicare and Medicaid matches, individual fees that are paid by some of the members living at the home, and then that aid and assistance and some other programs through the federal VA. Now, when I would just like keep that in the back of our mind as we build out this home. We were pretty cautious initially legislatively getting the Dalles as our first home and saying there's authorization for a second home, but let's prove the model works financially sustainably. And we don't, given how much, I mean, there's risks. I think we're managing through the risks of the build out in terms of, you know, does the federal, you can't tackle federal budget problems without looking at DOD and the federal VA. So there will be changes in our world, and I think we can manage through those, both from policy and politics, but then in terms of that build-out construction dollars. But there will also be changes, I think, over the next 5-10 years in what they are willing to pay for long-term care for our veterans. Is it pushed down more to a community model? There's so much uncertainty out there that I think let's get this one built, let's prove how it works, and then again, we take a next generation look at how do we continue to serve long-term care needs for our veterans.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Cameron pointed out something, he was dancing all around it. You don't, and I don't want to scare the heck out of Chair Nyquist, but you know, once you get a home built, you don't just sit back and it's done and things work well. When you have a 2011 session where you're looking at, if you have 19% Medicaid cuts, you know, you close the home. You can't do that. So it's an ongoing balancing act within this building and the budget for other inputs like Medicaid that help. So it's a constant balancing act here.
I can appreciate that. Any further questions? Your comments about, you know, choosing tile with your spouse or wanting a bigger garage, it's almost like you were there with my wife and I as we were planning to build something.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Tile and choose the garage? Or?
No. Naturally. Let's build a smaller garage, you get better tile.
Yeah. We've been doing that. Mr. Chairman, are you reserving your room at this point?
Won't be long.
Probably not yet. After that comment.
Well, thank you for that. Is there anybody else who wanted to testify on House Bill 2417? I'm sorry, 2680. Getting ahead of myself. 2680. Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2680. And I will open a work session on House Bill 2680.
Chair Matthews, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendment dated February 11th, 2013.
Representative Fagan moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendment dated February 11, 2013. Is there any discussion? Any further discussion? Is there objection? If not, the amendment is adopted.
Chair Matthews, I move House Bill 2680 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Now will this go to the floor or this go to the subsequent
referral? Subsequent referral, ways
and means. We'll stand to these for just one moment.
Heck goes to ways and means.
Yeah, you're correct. Would you like to make the motion?
Go ahead.
So,
ways and means.
With the subsequent referral.
Ways and means.
I will amend my statements, Chair Matthews. I rather move House Bill 2680 as amended to Ways and Means for a subsequent referral.
So that works, doesn't it? And Representative Fagan moves House Bill 2680 with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is there any further discussion on the motion? Yes, Representative Esquivel.
The only thing I can say is that somehow I feel like a pilot that's going across the Atlantic and we're past the point of no return. That's the way I feel. We've already made commitments to the local people. They've stepped to the plate. This is, I believe, lottery bonds that's going to pay for this, so it'll be out of the lottery. But I still feel like, you know, it's like, what choice do you have? You don't have a choice here. And thanks for the community for stepping up. We appreciate the community of Lebanon for stepping up to that.
So. And Godspeed to you, Representative Esquivel. Hope a safe return.
Yeah.
Hope I make us. Representative Parrish.
It's just for, you know, for the record, it's amazing when you put some money on the table, this room fills up.
I know.
So let's continue to have those conversations about funding good things for veterans.
It's a lot of folks are sharing their happy heart for Valentine's Day today for the housing issues of our veterans, and I appreciate their attendance. Any other comments, discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I hope we see shovels digging and dirt flying here real soon.
Well, Representative. Exactly. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fagan?
Aye.
Vice Chair Parrish?
Aye.
So this will head over to Ways and Means, subsequent referral, and I expect that Representative Barnhart will assist us, and you know, as a committee, we should be advocating with other committee members in Ways and Means so that they understand the dialogue that's taking place through this committee, and you know, basically what we've uncovered today. Thank you very much for your time, and that concludes House Bill 2680. And with that, you know, I know that Representative Wisnett wanted to be here to help start us off at 1400. And audience, I know that you you're here for the next bill, and I appreciate you being in the building. If you wouldn't mind, I'd like the committee to stand at ease for approximately 9 minutes. We'll give Representative Wisnett a chance to be here to testify to kick off House Bill 2417. So if we'll just stand at ease for about less than 10 minutes. We'll be right back. Thank you so much.
Is that 7 minutes, David?
hear you.
First precinct.
We will reconvene the meeting of the House Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness. Again, thanks for being here. It's Valentine's Day. Excited to share our heart with veterans' housing issues.
Birthday too.
And we do have Representative Wisnett, who has been here, so I appreciate you affording us just a little opportunity to have him open our public hearing. So at this point, I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2417. Ms. Edwards?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2417 increases recording and filing fees collected by the county clerk and deposited in the county assessment and taxation fund by $5 from $15 to $20. It instructs the Housing and Community Services Department to expend at least 25% of funds in the emergency housing account and in the home ownership assistance account received by the county assessment and taxation fund to assist homeless veterans and veterans at risk of becoming homeless. It also requires the Housing and Community Services Department to expend at least 25% of the general housing account from the County Assessment and Taxation Fund on veteran housing needs.
Thank you very much. And we'll first call Representative Wisnett, if you'll take the dais there. And thanks for coming. I know you're very busy, sir, and really appreciate it. And it was completely out of respect for you that we wanted to start this off with your testimony. So we appreciate how busy you are, and thanks for coming and making this a priority.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Gene Wisnett. House District 53, which is Bend, Redmond, Tumalo, and Sun River. Chair Matthews, thank you for bringing us this bill. And I'm here briefly to tell you that it's terrible that we have to do this, that we really have veterans who've served our nation in uniform that are homeless and need the benefits that your bill will bring forth. And I will be short and brief. You've got some other experts that are going to talk to you. But as the bill says, the thing that really did attract me was the homelessness part of this. It does do other things, keep veterans in their home and things like that that you'll hear from experts. But again, it's a pleasure to honor to speak on this bill. We have great people in Central Oregon. You're going to hear from Chuck Hemingway, who runs our Central Oregon Veterans Outreach. And just as I came in, he says, Gene, I found a place where we could maybe get 30 or 60 more beds for homeless vets. And that's terrible that we have that situation. But this bill, $5 doesn't seem like a lot, but it'll go a long way in helping. And I think it's good as people have to understand, the realtors have to understand that it's a total, not per page, when you're filing. So each transaction is $5 to help veterans stay in their home, find places to live. And I would hope this committee would move the bill forward and the idea forward. And I'm glad to join you, Chair Matthews, and support it. And colleagues, please move the bill.
Well, thank you, Representative. And I couldn't be prouder to be, you know, with you on there as, co-chiefs. You're a man I have great respect for. And, from the other side of the aisle, things have the best chance when we're working together. And really appreciate being a part of this with you. And for somebody that understands the needs and been working in this building for as long as you have, thanks for signing on and being a part of this bill with us.
Thank you, Chair.
Let's see if we have any questions of the committee before we release you back to your duties for the day. Anybody have anything of the good representative? Thank you again, sir. Really appreciate it. Have a great day. He said everybody but you.
Oh.
And we will call up our first panel, if we will. And we have several panels that will testify. And then we'll also give a chance if anybody out there feels compelled to add something that doesn't get covered. This has been an issue being worked on for quite a while. And first up on the first panel, I'd like Ryan Fisher, Val Valfrey, and Charles Hemingway. And you gentlemen can testify in any way that you see fit, to best communicate your message. I would say, don't forget, state your name for the record and tell us a little bit about it. Here we go.
I'll kick it off. Thank you very much, Chair Matthews, members of the committee. My name is Ryan Fisher. I represent the Oregon Housing Authorities, the Community Action Partnership of Oregon, and today I'm also speaking on behalf of the Housing Alliance. The bill before you today originates from a shared goal among all those who you will hear testify today that no one who served our country should sleep in the street, should have to sleep outdoors. We want to make sure that veterans have a place that they can call home. We know that this goal is going to require commitment. The Department of Veterans Affairs estimates that Iraq and Afghanistan veterans who become homeless do so in 3 years, compared with Vietnam-era veterans who generally took 13 years when they became homeless to do so. As a state, we must take this head on, which is why we are bringing House Bill 2417 here to you today. What this bill will do is create dedicated, ongoing resources that will prevent and end homelessness among veterans. It will provide safe, decent, affordable housing for veterans, and it will create opportunities for home ownership and asset development for veterans. These resources will derive from a $5 increase to the state document recording fee, and as was mentioned by Representative Wisnett, this is a per document fee, not a per page fee. And also, because of the introduction that that Elizabeth gave, which I appreciate, I want to really clarify something. You heard that 25% number, and the reason you hear that 25% number is we have an existing fee that is $15. We are increasing it by $5. I want to be very clear, all $5 that we are increasing will go to veterans, but we have a $20 now fee, and so the statute says of that full $20, that $5 that we're talking about today will go to veterans. So I just wanted to make sure that that part is clear. As you look at the bill, you will see that that there are three accounts that receive funds, and I want to quickly talk through those three. So if you were to draw a circle and you were to draw an L in the middle of that circle, you're welcome to follow along if you wish, but I think it's pretty simple. From 12 o'clock to 3 o'clock, that big chunk there, it goes to developing affordable rental housing. And what this does is it gives homeless veterans a place to go to. It creates affordable places where veterans who have families or special needs have a place where they can live in an affordable and safe way. It also could do things like funding strategic land acquisition and other strategies to help veterans find affordable housing. So then on your chart, if you were also to take a line between about 2 and right before 2 o'clock, you would get the second portion, which is 10% of the revenue will go toward these very flexible but very important funds called the Emergency Housing Account. And these are these flexible dollars that can help veterans who are homeless or on the verge of being homeless. And these are what we've talked about in this committee in the past, and you'll hear some more about this today. We've got these federal tools, VASH vouchers, SSVF, capital and per diem. These are funds that are coming into the state from the feds, but there are gaps in how these funds are able to help veterans. And these flexible dollars are critical for making sure that we can do things like security deposits and application fees for homeless veterans who are transitioning into their first home. Finally, the last section, 14% of the revenue will support home ownership. And these are through strategies like home buyer education and credit counseling, down payment assistance, or even construction and land subsidies to make home ownership more affordable for veterans. So this revenue will match with existing programs and systems that are in place that will help veterans achieve home ownership through the OR-VET program is another thing that these home ownership dollars could be paired with. So finally, in closing, I'll let the other folks get into the details of each of these sections, but our intention today is to introduce you to some of the housing and service providers that are working in the state. They'll describe the work they do and how it impacts veterans. Folks who have knowledge statewide will help you understand the scope of the need that we're seeing, and this will at the end, I hope, honor our commitment to those who have served our country. We need to provide all veterans an opportunity to have a place to call home, and that's the point of our being here and of talking to you today. I want to thank you all for your consideration of this bill. I've talked to each of you about this bill, and I want to thank you for your leadership, and it's an honor to work with this committee and with the folks who you'll hear speak today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. And would it be best to hear from the panel, or do you want to get the specific questions?
I think it's going to be specific of Ryan to get it out of the way, if I might, Mr. Chair. Thank
Absolutely.
You. Ryan, I think it was 2009 that we passed the $15 document recording fee. So we've got some track record there. Based on the additional $5, what's projected, the kind of money that we'll be able to raise to go into the fund?
Thank you. I skipped over that line. I very much appreciate the question. Based on current estimates, we anticipate that in the 13-15 biennium, this will raise just over $6 million.
Okay. Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yes, follow up.
Last year when we were talking about the document recording fee, and there was a Housing Alliance coalition that put together to help us pass that bill in 2009. It's my understanding that you've been around and talked to those members and gathered support. How are you feeling about the strength of the support behind this bill?
Thank you very much, Chair Matthews, Representative Huffman. The Housing Alliance is a large coalition of housing providers, and this is a top priority of the Housing Alliance. When you are talking about that bill from 2009, I think you may also be talking to some of the other members that are not members of the Alliance, but who worked on that.
Joined in.
We have been speaking openly with those groups and organizations and talking to them about this. I'm not aware of their position, and I will leave it to them to state their positions. But we certainly have done our best to let them know about this bill and how we intend to try to use this really important tool to make sure that veterans have housing.
And I appreciate that there was the Alliance, but a coalition that was built around that. So thanks for the clarification.
And I should point out, too, we do have a written testimony provided from Tracy Manning, the director of the Portland Housing Bureau, expressing their support behind House Bill 2417. Yes.
Thank you for your testimony. I was not here in 2009 for the $15. So can you just help me understand, does that already go to veterans housing as well, or is that just homeless housing? So this, so the $15 before, what does that go to?
Absolutely. So Chair Matthews, Representative Fagan, thank you for the question. The existing fee goes to those same three areas that I described. They are not specifically targeted for veterans. Now, some of them are already serving veterans because there is the need in the community and they're serving their communities. What this does is it builds on that infrastructure that has been in place since 2009, and it creates new dollars that are specifically targeted for veterans.
Absolutely.
So of this new, $6 million or so that would be produced in the 13 to 15 biennium, is that going to serve veterans in kind of the vessels you've already created for helping homeless Oregonians, or are they going to create kind of new programs or new homes or anything that's different, or is it just making sure that out of all the homeless folks who are being served that we're making certain that we're serving our veterans?
Chair Matthews, Representative Fagan, thank you again for the question. What you will hear after I'm done are the people who are doing the work in communities around the state. Some of the programs that they're already running are serving veterans, and these are programs that could be replicated around the state. In some cases, I think this will create opportunities for new partnerships and new types of programs that meet the specific needs of veterans. In other cases where we have systems that are already serving veterans, this will just provide additional resources to make sure that those veterans, or that more veterans, can be served.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Esquivel.
I would like for you to bring to my office a printout of what we have accomplished with the $15, because to be honest with you, we made a deal about in 2009 on this issue that we were not going to come back to this well to sidestep some issues on other taxations. Well, we're back at the well again. I would like to see what administration costs are running, and I would like to see what kind of groups. We have to have veterans in the group because there's just veterans out there, period. But I don't think there's any specific target, if my memory serves me correct, from that 2009 debate we had and discussion we had. But I would like to see what exactly we're doing, because I'll be honest with you, I don't want to build a bureaucracy and feed a bureaucracy.
Representative Matthews, Chair Matthews, Representative Esquivel, I'd be happy to bring that to you. And I agree. Part of why we designed the bill this way is because we wanted, rather than inventing new systems, We wanted to utilize the ones that are already in place because we want this to be about serving people and not creating new administrative costs.
One follow-up.
Follow-up.
Are we going to be hiring more people?
Chair Matthews, Representative Esquivel, that's a hard question for me to answer at this point, but I would say that there is a that there are many systems that are in place where we're going to be developing housing, so there will be people who maybe who get hired to build homes or to build properties because of some of these investments. There may be some new people who are available to help veterans deal with their services and getting to the VA hospital or applying for their VA benefits. There may be some new positions that might be something that comes out of this.
So that's a yes.
It's
just a yes or a no.
Chair Matthews, works. Representative Esquivel, it is very possible. And I guess what I'm saying is that this bill is designed to have a lot of options so that local communities can decide what they need to do to serve veterans. In some cases, that's going to require some manpower, and in which case,
but it'd be local control.
There is, Chair Matthews, Representative Esquivel, there is a lot of local control. These funds go to the state and are allocated into local communities.
Thank you.
And given the folks that I see we're going to hear from today in testimony, we do have some folks from Central Oregon, we have some folks from inner city, so we'll be hearing about that local control, I'm sure. Yeah. Any other questions of Mr. Fisher? Okay, Mr. Valfrey, if you would, or Mr. Hemingway, whoever would like to go first.
Thanks. Okay. Well, good afternoon, Chair Matthews and members of the committee. I am Val Valfrey. I'm the Executive Director for the Housing Authority of Washington County. I'm also a member of the Governor's State Housing Council, and more pertinently for your consideration, I am a 25-year Air Force veteran and a pilot with combat service in Vietnam. I thank each of you for your service both to this nation and to this council, and I thank you for hearing my testimony today about the critical need for veterans housing in Oregon. This testimony, however, is not about me, for I was one of the fortunate ones that came back to a home, to a loving family, and a job. My testimony seeks to honor and to advocate for those who have served valiantly and now must seek the help and assistance of a grateful state and nation. As you know, far too many veterans are homeless in America, with estimates ranging from 130,000 to 200,000 every night. Moreover, three times that many veterans are struggling with excessive rent burdens, which, if they're unabated, can lead considerably to increased homelessness. What is even more staggering for me to comprehend is that at least one out of every three homeless persons who is sleeping on a doorstep or in an alley or in a cardboard box in our cities and our rural communities has put on the uniform of this great country and has been has been there when we called for them. I would hope that you would share my concern that this status quo is unacceptable. Oregon proudly is the home of choice of many veterans. More than 330,000 men and women call this place home, nearly 250,000 with wartime experience. But shamefully, nearly 1,500 veterans live here are homeless. This too is unacceptable, as we should never allow the words homeless and veteran to ever be used together. Nor should any veteran have to choose between living in the streets or having to be relegated to life's shadows. No, if we are truly to honor their selfless service, we got to do better. As a Housing Authority Executive Director, we recently had as many as 6,000 families on our wait list, both veterans and non-veterans. The veterans we do see span a continuum of service from Vietnam through Afghanistan. They include single men, couples, single men, women, couples, and increasingly, single parents with children. These veterans are often distrustful of government and its promises, have little patience for bureaucratic excuses and barriers, or well-intentioned processes that appear to lead to nowhere. So when these veterans make the effort to come off the street or out of the woods, we must seriously commit to adding value to their efforts. I remind staff that they only have one opportunity, and just one, to do it right by our veterans. Just one opportunity to be patient and to truly listen. Just one opportunity to give accurate and timely advice. just one opportunity to show gratitude and respect. Otherwise, these veterans will leave our doors and not return, and we would have committed a great disservice. We are here today requesting your support to provide us with the tools to more effectively assist these veterans. As you will hear from members of the panel today, we know what works. We know how to prevent or end a veteran's homelessness. We know how to build affordable housing to serve low-income veterans. We know how to help veterans to better access home ownership. With additional resources provided through this funding source, we will be able to significantly and measurably impact veterans living in Oregon. In summary, I hope you will take away from this presentation and those that will follow me that we need to restore honor and dignity to our veterans by providing opportunities for housing, jobs and jobs training, and supportive services. Thank you for hearing my testimony. I would be happy to answer any questions you might have either now or after the presentations.
Thank you, Mr. Valfrey, and thanks for your testimony. Mr. Carpenter, if you would, please. Mr. Hemingway. Chuck Carpenter, my line.
Good afternoon, Chair Matthews and members of the committee. My name is Chuck Hemingway with Central Oregon Veterans Outreach, and we're located in Bend, but we have services that we offer throughout Central Oregon. With me today is Mr. Rich Zabrowski, who is the program manager for our Supportive Services for Veteran Families. That's a VA grant that allows us to provide services to veterans who are about to become homeless to prevent them from becoming so, and also to rapidly rehouse those veterans who are out there living in a tent or a car or some other place unsuitable for human habitation right now. Because of what we're seeing in Central Oregon regarding the serious housing issues that veterans in our area face, we think that HB 2417 is a critically important piece of legislation. It will complement a comprehensive program that COVO has already developed and implemented in Central Oregon that allows us to take right now a homeless veteran from a tent to a permanent home. Our program was created precisely because of the problems we are currently seeing in Central Oregon and that HB 2417 will address. So let me perhaps explain. Under our housing program, we can take a veteran who's living right now in a tent or a car into an emergency shelter that we have a contract with at Bethlehem Inn, a local homeless shelter. They can stay there for 30 to 90 days. We work with them on what other housing options they might have at that point. Then we can take them into another program we have called Home of the Brave, where they can stay for up to 2 years in transitional housing. So you're going from emergency shelter into transitional housing for up to 2 years. At that point, after they've received case management services, we can offer them permanent supportive housing with case management, where they then have a permanent place of their own. They have a one-year lease, and they can stay there for as long as they want. We currently have 17 units that we've developed throughout Central Oregon, and we have a waiting list for those units. We're coming online in May with another six, and I've got a stack of 40 applications right now that are from homeless veterans who need a place to live, and we can't serve them. But through this legislation, it's going to provide a mechanism that would allow us to help them. How would it do so? The emergency housing account would allow us to tap into funds for preventive measures and also to get veterans rapidly rehoused. The general housing will help us build affordable rental housing and allow us to acquire properties or build a new if we don't have a property that we can renovate. And then the holy grail is move them into home ownership. We currently are working with two veteran families right now that have gone through our program, going from a shelter into a transitional program into one of our rental units, and we're working with our local builders to get them a home of their own. And with this home ownership program that this legislation will provide, that's the holy grail. No longer are we seeing just the Vietnam era veterans who are struggling to find affordable housing. Increasingly, we're seeing the younger post 9/11 global war on terrorism veterans and the veterans coming back from Afghanistan, as well as those we've already been seeing for a while from Iraq. We have in our our supportive services for veteran families right now. We only started it last October. We've already got 90 people that we've served, and we're expecting by this time next year we'll have had 200 requests for assistance, and we can't simply serve them all. As a Vietnam-era veteran myself, and having seen what other veterans returning from Vietnam experienced, we owe it to the increasing number of younger veterans we are seeing not to let the same thing happen to them. And so we strongly urge passage of HB 2417. I want to thank you for your attention. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hemingway, and thank you for your service. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chuck, you kind of moved through it pretty quickly, but I think one of the key components, just to show that we're not, your organization isn't just taking money and throwing it out there and hoping it sticks. You mentioned the caseworker. Would you mind expanding on that just a little bit to let us know what kind of services the caseworker provides for the veteran?
Yeah, Representative Matthews, Representative Huffman, to answer your question, we recognize that where these veterans have come from, they've had a pretty hard go, and that there are problems that they had along the way that put them into homelessness in the first place. And so we don't want them to lose that, just get them into housing and then just leave them there and let them perhaps encounter some circumstances that might cause them to become homeless again. So we have a lease addendum with every property that we have in which they agree to enter into case management services, meet routinely with a case manager based on their needs. If we have a high-functioning veteran, might not need to meet with them maybe but once a month. If someone has really been struggling, but they're doing a good job and they're willing to work with us, we'll meet with them more often. But the purpose of that case manager is to help them get to medical appointments, help them get a VA claim going for a pension, help them apply for Social Security disability, anything that they need to function as a member of society that maybe they need some help with. That's what that case manager does.
Thank you for the clarifying question, and thank you for your testimony. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We mentioned there was about 1,500 homeless veterans here in the state of Oregon. Do we have any handle on how many of those are the Vietnam-era veterans that decided to go back in the bush and stay back in the bush and are now coming out because of health problems?
Excellent question, Chair Matthews, Representative Esquivel. Sir, I don't know those figures, but they are accessible, and I can get them for you.
I'm just curious myself because I'm, I have quite a soft spot in my heart for those veterans. So if you could email those to me, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
That might be helpful for the entire committee too, Representative. So thanks for bringing that forward. It's always important to try to identify what era these veterans are from. And you know, as we talked about the World War II veterans earlier, and they're passing away rather rapidly, but we also heard the other day that our Vietnam veterans are about the same rate.
Yeah, they are.
Which is very concerning. And, you know, just because the wars may end doesn't mean our obligations, end with it. So, and responsibilities, and thank you so much. And I want to let everybody know, too, we've got the committee after it's going to be canceled today. So we have this room before we end up, ironically, homeless. Instead of 2:45, we can go till 3 o'clock. So we'll be going until 3 o'clock to accept the testimony. And I say that in case you're providing written testimony rather than read your testimony. You can certainly paraphrase that for us. But it's very helpful to get this first panel's comments on the record. So beyond this, committee, if you'll indulge, we'll try to get as much testimony as possible. We have two more panels to bring up. And I do want to say to Ryan Fisher, thanks for all your work on this. I mean that. You have coordinated this thing from the beginning. You're doing amazing work. In the end, I equate it to, you've carried that football all the way to the goal line, mm-hmm. and now you're passing it to us to carry. And I really appreciate your effort. So thank you so much. And to the panel, thank you very much. And next up, I guess first I need to know if anybody signed up to testify that lives greater than 50 miles away. Sir, and your name?
I think I'm the next panel.
Oh, okay. Are you by chance Jim Tierney?
Kraft.
Okay. We can craft. Okay. Thank you. Well, Ken, come forward if you would. And Martha Olmsted and Don Rogers, please. And so we'll just ask you to state your name for the record and give us your testimony. And if you would, please let us know, too, if you're veterans and which branch you may have served in.
Chairman Matthews, representatives, my name is Ken Kraft. I am a Iraqi war veteran. Enlisted first in my first part of my career and went over to the officer side to finish it off. I served in Camp Slayer, Iraq. It was a presidential appointed camp. And my military career was ended with 13 mortars when I lost my knees. My transition back, and I think I would like to speak just a little bit about barriers. And that's my key word is barriers. My transition back was a kind of a personal and medical, and it took 2 years of surgeries. I was fortunate, like the other gentleman spoke before me. He had good family, I had good family, I had good friends, and I was able to maneuver the obstacles that are sometimes insurmountable. And I sometimes wonder about some of the lower enlisted, some of the troubles they would have, because they are big at times. As an officer, each day when these young men and women would go out on these patrols and convoys, if I was not with them, it's an absolute obligation. I don't know how to tell you anything more closely to that. I'm responsible to make sure they can come home to their mothers and fathers and wives and families. And so I'm not asking for handouts. Somebody else might do that. It's just more of a hand up and some of their restoring honor and helping us transition back into our communities. We're already there. We're serving in jobs and schools and so much. And I've walked into some of the homeless camps since coming home, and I've seen some of the Vietnam veterans. And I would say thank God for the Vietnam veterans who have been treated poorly. And upon our return home, they've been great mentors. And they've also seen some of the care we're getting. Because of them, we have some of the services today. Some of the folks, when you're talking about homeless and the VASH housing and some of the other agencies, I also serve as a VFW commander in a local Oregon City area for several veterans. And I want to speak very quickly about three veterans I have, all honorably discharged. Two of them are active duty from one's Navy, one's Army, and one's a reservist. Very good young men and women. Because of situations in life, part of the post-traumatic stress syndrome, PTSD, the label, or TBI labels, financial issues come into play. A lot of these young men and women, if they did have money, they actually might give it all to someone else or do some self-destructive behaviors, and other behaviors fall into these. When you go to a VASH housing or some of the housings, the first and last rent, some of the getting into the house, some of the little obstacles there become almost insurmountable. It's warming up a little bit in the temperatures, but I'd ask you, coming up if it cools back down, before you go to bed some night, 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, walk outside and just feel for a couple minutes the temperature. And kind of put yourself a little bit in that. And then take away the full belly, the paycheck, the warm house, and a possibility of that changing when you wake up in the morning or the next day. So when you go down to do a VASH housing and you meet the criterias, and it can be a 1 to 2 or 4 week process, that's a big barrier. When you're already homeless, you don't have two nickels to rub together for a breakfast or lunch the next day. Or in my county, 43 or 46% of the youth are in the homeless area. So if you have children, a young mother, or these, it can be a real obstacle very fast. So what I would basically say to this is barriers. I would ask you to, when you're considering this $5 increase or a change or whatever else, just trying to remove obstacles and barriers for these young men and women and the Vietnam vets, and if there are career or World War II veterans, to make it just a little smoother transition. Not to get a free item or that. They want to come back and work. But to make it an easier process to get into that home so they can go on with their life. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And I notice on your lapel, Bronze Star, sir.
Oh. So.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you, sir.
Martha Homestead.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman Matthews and members of the committee. Martha Homestead, Columbia County. And I'm going to write off a little bit off of you, because I'm usually the case manager that has to say I'm a little nervous. Please forgive me. I'm a case manager. I'm not a politician. This is the first time in this building. So
thank you for
my heart is a heart of a case manager. I'm usually the one that has to tell this gentleman, I'm sorry, I don't have the funds to help you. However, let's see what we can do. Let's see which door we can knock. This door is closed, but this window, let's see if this window, we can open this window. So I gave the gentleman some forms that we can pass. About a month and a half ago, we had a gentleman named John. His name's not real. He talked to the Chronicle. John came from Afghanistan and Iraq. Homeless veteran. He had a paycheck. Most of his paycheck went to pay child support. By the time he came to our office, he only had like $19 left. Homeless, sleeping in his van. The thing that I had to offer was, I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do. Little did I know that he was coming. He was just released from the hospital.
Thank you.
Severely PTSD. Just like you said, some of the barriers that they have are so serious, and they don't want to tell you. These are functioning individuals. They fought for our country. They know how to function. They just need those barriers removed so they can be in homes. They can function. We, as case managers, we owe it to them. But we don't have the tools to give them those tools. We don't have homes for them. We don't have the funding. We owe it to them. I've been doing this for 10 years. Our waiting lists keep getting longer and longer due to the economy. I don't know what to tell you. I'm not going to tell you that if you give me $5 extra, it's gonna solve the problems. I wish I could tell you that. I don't have a magic wand. I don't have that. But I can guarantee you that I'm going to serve more veterans. If I have 10 in the waiting list, I'm definitely going to serve at least 3 more. But this veteran that I have, that I gave you a sheet on, this veteran, we helped him, we'd housed him. And because of EHA and our veteran services, we're able to coordinate those services for him. He's housed now. And believe it or not, he came knocking on my door and he said, I believe you're doing the one-eyed homeless count. I am going to count the veterans that are out there in the woods that they don't want nothing to do with government. I'm going to count those veterans for you, because if you go out there, they're going to shoot you. So I'm going to get those counts for you. So he's out there doing that for me today because they want to give back. They don't want you to, you know, they don't want to take pity. They want to step up. They want to help. So that's what I do. I'm not a politician. I'm a caseworker. So please help us. Help us do this. That's what I'm here for. So.
You know, Martha, you're not a politician yet, but if you run for office, something tells me you're passionate. You'll be a politician.
Almost for you. Yeah.
Thanks so much for being in the building. Your voice is instrumental on this issue, and thank you very much. And we'll go to our next panel member. But I have to know, are you a veteran yourself, or do you have veterans in your family?
My husband is. My grandfather was. My father-in-law just passed away, was also a veteran, so yes, it's in the family.
Thank you for the passion you're serving our veterans with. Thank you so much. And Ms. Rogers.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chairman Matthews and representatives. My name is Dawn Rogers. I'm from Eugene, Oregon, and I am an Army veteran. I served for 5 years in the Army, and I'm a case manager at the St. Vincent de Paul program called VetLift. VetLift is a housing program for homeless veterans. What I'd like to say about our program is that we give veterans the housing that's essential for them to address the issues that have brought them to the situation that they're in. A lot of times we see patterns where there's trauma, layers of trauma, maybe before military service and then during military service or even after military service. We do very intensive case management so then we can build a rapport with the veterans, get an idea of some of those barriers that they may not even know that they have or may not want to address. And so we can identify them and then lead them to the services that are going to help them. We provide housing for up to 24 months for these veterans. And I think one of the things that's so important about our program, we provide the very intensive case management so that they meet with a case manager every week. But then we also have community meetings, community groups. We have dinner together once a week with everybody in the program. We have 15 GPD veterans, and it could be themselves and their families. We all have dinner together, and everybody checks in. So we build this community where the veterans have peer support. This is really important to the veterans, too, because veterans want to serve. That's part of the reason why they join the military. So if they're in this community where they can help one another, it helps the case managers to see that they're all doing well together, and it helps them to help their brothers and sisters out. So I just want to, again, reiterate that housing is essential. Many of the veterans that come to us have PTSD and addiction issues as self-medication. You really can't address PTSD when you're camping, living in your van, and you have to address the PTSD as well as the addiction issues to be successful in housing. So that's what I would like to say. Thank you very much for your time and consideration, and I would appreciate any questions.
Thank you for your service. Thanks for coming before the committee again. Nice to have you back in the building. Committee members, do you have any questions of this panel? Yes, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank all of our panel members who did an absolutely outstanding job. In particular, thank Martha, who is a caseworker for a community action team in St. Helens. And the passion that she exhibited here today, I think, is the passion that community action team undertakes in its service for its clients throughout the northwest part of our state. I believe it's Columbia, Clatsop, and Tillamook counties. Did I get that right? I know that Representative Boone is also very familiar with them, and if Martha ever does become a politician, I think I'm in trouble. So,
thank you so much, and to Ken Kraft as the commander of the VFW, thank you. You have several members of the VFW that are on this panel as well, so appreciate your work, and thank you so much for being here today. We'll call up our next panel, and this will be, if you could please come forward, Ann Williams, Jim Moorfield, and is Cameron Smith going to testify as well? Yep. Thank you, sir. And you can start in whatever order you'd like. Please state your name for the record, and thanks very much for being here in the Capitol today.
Representative Matthews, Chairman Matthews, and panel members, I'm Ann Williams. I work for St. Vincent de Paul in Eugene, Oregon. I want to start off by saying I came to developing housing for veterans reluctantly. I would see folks standing on the street corners with signs. I wasn't sure how to relate to these folks, but I also recognized from conversations with our local VA, at that point, it was 2005, and there were 4,500 homeless veterans in the Eugene, Springfield, Roseburg area. That was an intolerable bit of truth. And so we began putting together our first permanent supportive housing for homeless veterans. And I can remember the day folks moved in. And I can remember the joy on people's faces. I also remember painfully the next morning when our then case manager came and said, "We've had our first death." We had a gentleman who moved in who someone gave him a recliner and a television. He had been living in a homeless camp along the river. For the first time in years, he had a safe, warm place that was his own. And all of the adrenaline that he had used to stay alive drained away, and he died very peacefully. That was very hard for all of us. And it made, I think, not only the first veterans who moved into those 13 units, but the staff who provided intensive services for them absolutely committed. We need more than those original 13 units. We need transitional housing, and we need more permanent supportive housing. Putting these projects together is challenging. Developing any affordable housing is a nightmare. You take what you need to charge in rent over here, and then you look at what is this sucker going to cost, and the Grand Canyon in between those two things has to be filled with grants and other public funds, because this number over here, the rent I can charge is fixed. And for our veterans, they come to us with zero to some income, and it's going to take us a while to reunite them with the veterans' benefits to which they are justly deserved. But that's a 6 to 9 month process at best. So I need to have a project that can somehow sustain itself on very little contribution from the individual veterans. Or I have to find grants, which are difficult, that provide operating and supportive service dollars so that I can pay the caseworkers like Don, so that I can pay the power bill, so that I can pay the garbage, so I can pay the insurance. All of these things are part of a project. The initial building of the project is going to determine how much subsidy I need. Senate Bill or House Bill 2417 will give us one more piece of a toolkit that is pretty severely depleted. The three buildings we have developed have each probably 15 to 16 funding sources in each one of those to get from the rent level that I can charge to the cost of the building and fill that Grand Canyon in between. I urge your support of this very critical piece of legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Williams. We appreciate your testimony. Are you a veteran, or do you have veterans in the family?
I have. My husband was a veteran, a Vietnam veteran.
Wonderful. Thank you for your service. Thank you for his service as well and your support of him. Yes, sir. If you will, please.
My name is Jim Moorfield. I'm executive director of Willamette Neighborhood Housing Services. We're a nonprofit affordable housing organization serving Lynn and Benton counties. As an aside, thank you for your support of the Lebanon Veterans Home. The document recording fee and this increase to the fee helps provide a range of address a range of housing needs, from emergency housing to serve homeless people to rental housing to help people stabilize long term, but including home ownership so that people can take that step towards the American dream. Willamette Neighborhood Housing Services is one of 17 regional housing centers around the state that operate to help people buy their first home. Some of their funding comes from the document recording fee. So first I want to start with why home ownership is important. Clearly the housing industry is an economic engine that helps our nation prosper and our state prosper, and when it suffers, our economy suffers. Closer to home, most of us that already own a home know exactly what the importance of home ownership is to our lives. And there's a lot of studies that support what you probably already know. Home ownership is a stabilizing force within our families, our neighborhoods, and our communities. Children do better in school. Families are healthier, and families tend to stay put longer when they own their own home, and they become more involved in their community because they're literally invested in their community, and that's good for all of us. Home ownership is a long-term investment that helps families weather economic ups and downs. Fixed-rate mortgages keep housing costs more predictable over a long period of time, a fact that's especially important later in life when many of us live on fixed incomes and cannot handle increases in rent. Home equity is particularly important in retirement when we can hopefully pay off the home mortgage and make our limited retirement funds stretch further. Owning a home is especially important to people, families of modest means. Prior to the recession, the median net wealth of a low-income homeowner in the United States was over 13 times that of a low-income renter. And 69% of the total net worth of lower-income homeowners is in the form of home equity. Since the recession, I'm sure those numbers have changed. But the setback should be temporary as home values recover. In any case, the home ownership Home ownership done right is a long-term investment that can help us all weather short-term ups and downs, with a long-term result being the ability to build wealth over time through home equity. Of growing importance to me as I get older is the potential for home ownership to fulfill one of my fondest dreams, the possibility that the wealth I generate through long-term home ownership can help me achieve the real American dream of making life better for my children. We also know that home ownership is not right for everyone, but home ownership done right can be a powerful tool for families of modest means to build wealth and security. And what do I mean by done right? I mean that the decision to buy a home is an educated and informed decision, that it's based on the household's ability to afford the purchase. It's financed with a mortgage with good terms, and that the purchase is sustainable over time because it allows the family to still save for the future, take care of the home, and weather temporary financial upsets. Helping the prospective home buyer achieve these goals is where my organization and the other regional housing centers come in. The 17 regional housing centers in Oregon provide home buyer education, one-on-one counseling that helps the prospective home buyer make smart choices. And we help our clients achieve home ownership by accessing loan products, down payment assistance, some of which is funded by the document recording fee, individual development accounts, and to put a package together that helps fill the gap between what a family can afford and what it costs to buy a home. These regional housing centers, as I said, are supported through the document recording fee. So there's an existing, well-established network of regional housing centers and housing counselors and home buyer educators who are ready to do our part to help more veterans achieve access to home ownership and the American dream. Thank you.
Thank you. And for the committee members, as we get ready here, Cameron Smith, I want you to know I respect that you have other committees you may have to get to. My intent will be to hear the public testimony, that there's others that came to testify today. And we can do that as long as one of us stays here, and I'm prepared to do that. So I don't want you to feel obligated, because I know that you have other committees to get to by the 1500 deadline. Cameron, if you will, please. Cameron Smith,
Matthews,
thanks for being here.
Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Cameron Smith, policy advisor for Governor Kitzhaber. I'll try to be quick in case there's more testimony behind me. Secretary Shinseki has been an inspiration at the national level, leading the charge on veterans' homelessness. Is it achievable to end veterans' homelessness in 5 years? Don't know, but setting that goal puts resources and services on the ground. But we all recognize, I think, that the federal government can't do it by itself. State government can't. Local government can't. It really is the cross partnership across our community. And we do see gaps in terms of the federal system that we've heard today in terms of VASH vouchers and other programs. And I won't lie, Representative Parrish commented that money matters. It's what fills this room. It's what makes Ways and Means powerful. Money is important, but if it's, I'm also sensitive to Representative Esquivel's larger point about how we spend that money and what outcomes we actually get. Is this, what is the administration level, the staffing level, what is actually getting out in terms of services to our veterans and broader citizens? There will be a much broader look at the Housing and Community Services Department in connection with this program. And we will have failed if we don't take those concerns into effect of how do we spend these $5. The additional revenue raised has to get us better outcomes across the area. The last comment that I just want to say, sometimes veterans as a tag gets associated with legislation just because it's such a positive area and a good feeling in the public support. This is one area where the housing community and the veterans community truly has stepped up and actually partnered. This is not cobbled together just to jam this through. It has been a long effort with a lot of stakeholder engagement, and I give a lot of credit to the housing community for leading that charge and truly going out and engaging the veterans community on that front. So that's all, crosses urban, rural, veterans. It will help our broader citizens with the rest of the funds. So I think it's a great program.
Thanks for your testimony, and I appreciate the work you do as a policy advisor to the governor, but also looking forward to you as the director for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. Committee, any questions for this panel? Thank you very much for being here today, and thank you for your testimony. Have a great day. We had three panels that had committed to testifying today, and I'm just curious, I know that the housing folks are in the building today, and if there's anybody out there feeling compelled to perhaps provide some testimony today, we'd like to hear from you. Is there anybody out there? We don't normally host an open mic night in this committee, but we're going to do so.
This First Amendment Friday?
Seeing none. So with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2417. And committee, is there anything else for the good of the order?
Nope.
Thank you for staying the extra time today, and luckily we had the cancellation. So with that, we will adjourn and close our committee on the House Veterans and Emergency Preparedness.